What do you get when you mix a physicist, a quantum vibrational physics researcher, and a healer? Well, for sure, it's magic, and you'll want to listen to find the answer and to discover how that combination can transform people's lives and can transform yours too when you follow our guest strategies that you can actually do yourself. Stay on for this magical ride. Hi, I'm Rosie Aiello, and welcome to the Vulnerable to Valuable podcast. We talk about moving forward after experiencing narcissistic, controlling, demeaning, and abusive relationships. If you've been in one of those, like me, you know what I'm talking about. You're not alone. You've been through some painful stuff. Shame, blame, that inner bully inside you. My mission is to lift and inspire you. Give you the ways you can reclaim your voice and value, your confidence, and the courage to be the new empowered you. Today, coming up in the podcast, our guest, Anastasia Chopless, gets vulnerable, sharing intimate stories of how it took her 20 years before she could trust herself to be in a healthy relationship. Join us as she reveals her transformation so that she could trust herself and now enjoys a healthy, fun, kind, and fulfilled relationship. We're going to talk to Anastasia in a moment, and first, a mini masterclass. In today's podcast, my guest and I explore one of my favorite topics, creating healthy relationships. Anastasia tells us that it took her 20 years being single after her many narcissistic relationships, both parental and intimate, before she learned what healthy relationships really were and how she could trust herself enough to allow one in. Sound familiar? You know, like Anastasia, I thought I knew what a healthy relationship looked like. And the reality, I knew nothing. For this mini masterclass, we're going to visit Freedom Fulfillment Pillar number 10, which covers both unhealthy and healthy relationship characteristics. I'm also going to give you some key questions to ask yourself when you're dating or if you're in a relationship to at least reference as a double check to see where some focus might be warranted. I find that women have a tendency to give in. I know that was me a lot. I mean, I gave in so many times simply because I had never really looked at myself. I never asked myself what my desires were. I did some simple checklists, you know, like, does he do this? And I just check, yes, and all seemed nice and straight and analytical. But I never looked deep into me. And that was such a big mistake and has been the biggest learning on my entire journey. I can't count the number of times, you know, after my escape and I started dating, I wanted to stop seeing a guy, but always felt bad I was going to end it. Does that sound familiar? I mean, who's in charge? His feelings are yours. Whose life is it? His or yours? I mean, it's just like when I think about it, it's like, how could I have done that? But it wasn't obvious to me. So I'm telling you this to watch that harmful thinking that you don't want to break up because you don't want to seem mean. Yep. Falling into that people-pleasing syndrome. That people-pleasing sure pops up, right? You hear it throughout the themes of these podcasts. Most of the time, though, your reaction and thoughts are so automatic, you don't even realize you are people-pleasing. It seems normal, but that's one of the ways you don't honor yourself and end up in unhealthy relationships. And we're going to change that today. So first, instead, get curious about the patterns in someone's behavior. So yes, I want you to wake up, not just be in it, but really be looking at the relationship. Too often, we make excuses for unacceptable behaviors because other parts of the relationship are just so great. He's fun. He takes me to wonderful places. He's smart. He's life of the party. He can be so generous. I'm describing my ex. That's who he was. And then there's that something that you can't quite put your finger on. Something feels off, but you ignore it. I did, over and over and over. I cover that in another pillar. Women are notorious for acting nice rather than meeting their own needs. Then they pay the price they know the longer they wait. You pay the price the longer you wait. You think you're stuck, but the truth is you have a choice. Now, when you're dating or you're thinking about dating or in a relationship, listen to these healthy relationship characteristics I'm going to share. And if you want to see, you know, if you want to, you want to see that whole list, then just go to vulnerabletovaluable.com and look for episode 10 to get the full transcript. It'll be really beneficial. So see, you know, how many you're experiencing or not. Discover, you know, be honest with yourself, how many you'd like to experience. And by no means is this list complete. I'm only sharing a little bit. And even the list that I have that I share with my clients is, it's not even exhaustive. Let me tell you, I made this list because I wanted to know what to look for. Here are some of them. They apologize and change their behavior and actions to reflect taking responsibility. I mean, the guy I'm with now, he's such a dream. And I see it all the time. And even though he may not apologize right away, but he'll come back within 24 hours. And you can tell, you know, I can tell that he's thought about it. And then he changes. I mean, it's just clear. He wants this relationship to work just as much as I do. They express anger without demeaning, yelling, or hitting you. That is basic, ladies. This is basic, okay? When you're in an argument or a conflict, they stay present instead of dredging up your past digressions that happened years ago. My ex was fabulous for pulling things that I had done like 30 years prior when I was in college. And he made it sound as if it was true, you know, as of today or whenever, you know, when we were married at the time. I mean, so they stay present. This is really, really key. Now, in the early stages of dating, they let you go at a pace that's comfortable for you. They respect your decisions when you say to slow it down or when you say no or no more, or that's enough. This is important, as you know, my dear lady, so that you feel safe. Women need to feel safe before they go into a relationship. I don't have to tell you that, but this is a way that you can create the safety in your relationship. Remember, you have choices. You are in charge. My current partner, he let me set the pace, or let me say it in a more empowering way. When I set the pace, he didn't pressure me or run away because it was too slow. That is a sign of a healthy relationship. They're not pressuring you and they're owning up to responsibility of how a woman needs to feel. They respect your boundaries and honor and respect what's important to you. You can both playfully tease each other. I just did this with my guy and it wasn't meant to be that way, but it's too long to describe here, but I washed his car. He didn't really notice it. And then what I thought, you know, I could have gotten upset, but I didn't get upset. I became really curious and it was so funny and it ended up covering over 2 days and yet it was all done for love. It was a lot of fun. This is an important one. There is no testing you or the relationship. You don't have to prove you care, right? You get just to be, right? Conflicts are resolved in an open, caring, and supportive way and supportive discussion for both of you. It's not just one-sided, right? It's together. They don't tell you how you have to behave to make the relationship better. And I'm sharing this with you because, you know, for other women who are listening who haven't been in an abusive relationship, this may think, well, what's the big deal? But for those of you who have been, you know that you were told how to behave, that you had to do this and you had to do that to prove your love, right? To prove that you cared. He would tell me how I had to behave. In a healthy relationship, they're not telling you how to behave. You're mature adults. And if he's telling you, then it's not a match, right? So you each discuss your needs. Each person grows and changes to make the relationship grow and become better. It's a mutual coming together to create the relationship that you want. And this next one is really the crux of everything that I do and everything I teach. You can be your authentic self with him without having to compromise your true essence. With my ex, I twisted myself into a pretzel to please him. Yeah, that darn people-pleasing illness again. With my love of my life now, I get to be me. I mean, again, coming from an abusive relationship, it's just like, who am I? And discovering me is what the Freedom Fulfillment Pillars is all about. That's what it's about, discovering who you are so you can create what you want. So I get to be all of me. My crazy, fun, serious, sensitive, smart self. It's just like, and it's so much easier when you get to be you. And it sounds good, right? But how do you do that? Well, you'll hear about it soon. They consider your perspective and opinion openly. So you discuss, you each discuss your point of view and you both accept that it's okay if you disagree. I couldn't share my opinion before. So these are things I had to learn as well, that I wasn't going to be slammed if I opened my mouth and got an opinion. Now my guy goes, what? Rosie doesn't have an opinion? I was like, well, of course she does. But, you know, he says it lovingly. He doesn't say it disparagingly. So look, there are many kind and decent men out there. And even if they are nice and decent, they still may not be a match for you. And that's okay. There are others. When I talk to women, especially those over 40, there's often a feeling of desperation. I don't want to be alone. I'm getting old. I have to find someone. You can hear it by the words and the tone. So if you come from desperation, that's going to be the energy you're putting out. So the guy is going to pick up on that energy and know you'll be a good target and take advantage of that separation. Or they're going to avoid you because you're going to come across too needy. The problem, though, is that you're not even aware you're doing this. So let's look a little bit deeper at you. I want you to be honest with your answers. Look, you know, you're hearing this. No one's watching you. You're all by yourself. But, you know, when you start to become honest with yourself, that's when you're going to be able to shift. One, you say you want a relationship, but you avoid the dating scene. You make up what you think are valid reasons why you can't date now. I can't tell you how many I've heard. You date, but you say nothing works, so you give up. Four, in a relationship, you tend to avoid conflict because it's uncomfortable. You may even think you're just being nice, not realizing it's costing you since you also avoid expressing your own needs or what's bothering you. Five, you give the other person what they need and want in the relationship, although your needs are not fully met. You just give and you give. You stay too long in a new relationship that you know is not right because it's just too uncomfortable to end it. Come on, my dear friend. How many times does it have to be? You give up too early in a new relationship because it's easier to avoid a conflict rather than develop the skills to resolve it. that happened with me almost. I mean, I was ready to break up with him because I couldn't handle it. I was still discovering myself. And my friend slash coach coached me so I could see a different perspective. So look, why can't I give you this list? Because I've been through it all and I've come out the other side. You don't clearly ask what you want from your partner. And I wonder why. You don't honor your boundaries. You settle. In fact, you know you're settling because you think you can't or you don't deserve better. This is what I can get. I can't tell you how many smart women tell me this. So if you're thinking this, you're not alone. But this thought has to change for you to be able to bring in a healthy relationship, to maintain a healthy relationship. Another thought you may be having, oh, I've been hurt too many times, so why bother again? And then another one, not necessarily the last one. I told you the lists are long. All the good ones have been taken, right? They're all married. They're all married or something. They're in something or taken. If you want to know where you are on this, take my complimentary quiz. In 4 short minutes, you'll discover where you are, where you want to be, and what you need to do. If you are serious about evolving into a new, empowered you, someone who can show up as the confident woman she once was or wants to be, then start now. Your life is waiting for you. Go to www.freedomfulfillmentquiz.com. That's freedomfulfillmentquiz.com. Today, we're going to meet Anastasia Choplis, a fourth generation healer, makes her uniquely qualified to understand the subtle energies that promote or deteriorate health and success. She transitioned from a 40-year career as a physicist and researcher studying quantum vibrational physics to become the scientific healer so that you can heal, transform, and shift to a healthy relationship too. Anastasia will be here in a moment. And first, thank you for downloading the Vulnerable to Valuable podcast produced by the Love is Kind Network. We're just starting out. Please subscribe. Every 5-star review on iTunes and every share will help our mission to impact 100 million women worldwide who have lost their voice, value, and authenticity in narcissistic, controlling, and abusive relationships. Will you help us achieve that goal? Now to the Anastasia Choplis, the scientific healer. Let's go from vulnerable to valuable with Anastasia. Welcome, Anastasia. I am so glad you are here.
Oh, Rosie, I am so delighted to be here. And this is one of my favorite topics.
You're a healer, fourth generation healer. That's pretty interesting. So it's kind of in your DNA.
It absolutely is. And I think everybody has an element of it. And some families will kind of suppress it and tell people, oh, that's not true. Like when my daughter was very young and she would see things, my ex-husband would tell her, like, what? What do you mean? You see things? But in my family, it started with my great-grandmother that we know of. We think it goes back further, but we know for sure because my great-grandmother was actually alive when I was very young. Wow. And so she would have these precognizant dreams. And then my grandmother, so we lived in the United States and they lived in Greece. And back then the phone calls were like ridiculously expensive and you could get on for like a minute or two and you would always say, hello, how are you?
And half the time trying to connect, yeah.
Yeah, half the time you were just saying, how are you? And and so she would always know when there was something going on at our house because she lived in Athens, we lived in Los Angeles, and she would call up and she goes, I know something is going on. And that was when my mother was in the hospital with a tumor in her spinal cord. And she flew she flew over to take care of my mom. She was 30. My grandmother was 57 and my mom was 37. So, and I was 17. There was only 40 years between two generations. But so we knew from then. And then my dad started revealing that he was a clairvoyant and could see things too. So we know from both sides of the family that this is happening. And so it was kind of accepted. So when my skills started, like I knew from the very beginning, from the time I was very young, that I could see things other people couldn't see. And then it really got very clear in my 40s when I got very sick and I was looking for answers. And that's where I learned that I have the ability to heal, the ability to see things that other people can't see, and the ability to hear answers.
That's fabulous. So tell our listener a little bit more about how you're helping people now.
So right now, my work is really focused on helping a person understand that their health and well-being and their happiness is all connected on a multiple level basis. It's your spiritual, emotional, mental, physical, relational, financial. It's every part is a part of the whole. You can't just separate out the individual pieces. And science is now catching up with what people have previously put in the woo category, or I call the lunatic fringe.
and they're connecting
the stuff that, you know, I could see and I could sense with real live measurements. For example, you know, standing up straight, taking a deep breath, just that particular motion will lower your stress hormones and raise your testosterone, which is kind of like your oomph hormone. And it will do it in a very short amount of time. And so this is a confidence pose. Mm-hmm. And if you even smile on top of it, it makes you feel good because your body posture and your inner hormones have a two-way conversation. And if you're in a crouched position, you are in a defensive posture and your stress hormones will go up. It's like, you know, that fight or flight is turned on. So we know that all of those things are combined. And what I do is my main business right now is teaching people all of that. So how to heal themselves, how to heal other people, you know, how to move energy, how to impact their lives and all of that. I have a 2-year certification program.
Beautiful.
We've just had people graduate from that and they're moving on into their own successful careers. And then the other thing that I do is I work with people individually, and that's usually people like CEOs of big companies that don't really want to take the time to do all the other the learning stuff.
Of course. Yeah. Well, that's fabulous. That's really fabulous. But I know you've come a long way and to get to this point as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we have long journeys and yours is no different. So, you know, I talk to women like yourself, like myself, who've had experienced in some way a narcissistic, controlling, demeaning, abusive relationship. And why don't you, share
a little bit,
I know, now it's still multi-generational, right?
Well, it really starts, for me, it really starts in my childhood. And I think that all of us that have had a parent that was very critical and controlling and, you know, you could call it passionate.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yes. And then you move into relationships that are like that because it feels normal,
right?
You move into those relationships, but it's different when you have a parent than when you have a spouse that it's like that. And I had two spouses like that. And you know, and then I started thinking that all men were the same, but the second one was worse than the first because he was also an alcoholic and there, you know, and also the father of my two children. So this difficult relationship, because it was the second one, the first one was very brief. And then because it was the second one and I really pushed through and stood it for 10 years, that this was very destructive to my own health. So even though I ran 6 miles before breakfast and ate a really healthy diet, I kept my weight. It's a little less than I am now. I kept my weight down and I did all the right things. I slept. I had the career of my dreams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That relationship, that stress, literally destroyed my health. I would have only 2 good hours a day. I grew a tumor. I had high blood pressure. I had high cholesterol. I had, you know, joint aches from head to toe. It's just like a really difficult relationship and a really difficult time in my life. And that was 26 years ago.
Yeah, this is, it's really interesting. I think most of the women I've spoken to, you know, myself included, have had this experience where you can't release the stress, right? Your body's like a pressure cooker and it just builds up. And if you can't release it and all the, you know, just being demeaned and put down and all the narcissism and the controlling.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how strong you are because you could be the strong, like I consider myself mentally tough. I put myself through a PhD program. I was been self-supporting since I was 17. You know, I've like raised 2 children on my own. I'm mentally and physically tough, but yet this daily onslaught, and it's not like it happens every day, but you're always waiting for that other shoe to drop. So you've always, you know, you're always white knuckling it through every day.
Right. You're always on this hyper alert stage. So you're always in a tense state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not tense, you're just a little bit less tense, but you're always in a tense state because you don't know when
yes.
they're going to scream you, when they're going to blow up. So you can never relax.
Yeah. You can never let your hair down. You're always, cause there's the criticism's always going to come in. Like you don't even know when.
You don't know when.
Yeah. You don't know when, like it could be that there's a ring of water on the countertop that you had a cup there. One of your kids left the cup there. And they come in and blow up over the ring of water. It's like, really?
Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. So then that puts you, gets you all off. And I think I'm glad you also mentioned that you're mentally strong and it doesn't matter. So it doesn't matter how smart you are. Obviously, yeah, the women have smart or how mentally strong. I really appreciate you sharing that because not very many people use those words. It's like, you think you're so good in so many areas of your other life that, well, you should, right? We get into the shoulds. We should be strong enough. We should be able to do this. We should have figured this out. And that leads to the loss of confidence.
Right. And there's like a lot of self-blame, like, you know, how did I get like this? I'm so smart. I'm so capable. You know, I got straight A's in school. Why didn't I get straight A's in life?
Right.
And it
right. I rose up the ranks in the company. Why can't I rise up the ranks in my own marriage, right? Or relationship?
Yeah. And I figured, you know, for me, it was kind of like the logical thing was that while I was in school, I got A's for doing all this stuff. So nobody ever told me that, you know, nobody ever criticized my work. I got praised whenever I did the right thing and got criticized when I did the wrong thing. But in life, you got criticized whether you did the right thing or not, you know, and what is the right thing? Like, you know, leaving the water ring on the countertop, it's not going to do anything. It's just sitting there. It'll dry up. No big deal.
Yeah, but not to them.
So what you get blamed for being you is what it is.
Yeah, you get blamed for just being you, but you don't mm-hmm. realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it cuts your confidence of who you are. Like you start to lose yourself. What were some of the other impacts, you know, that happened because of being in a narcissistic relationship?
I didn't trust myself to be in a healthy relationship. It took 20 years before I was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be in a relationship and I'd always be on hyper alert waiting for like, I was always looking for that one fatal flaw that would allow me to escape out of the relationship. I didn't want to sit there and fight it out again. I didn't want to go through all that stress again. So I was basically alone for 20 years. I was raising my kids during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was 60 that I met my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
Yeah.
And the thing is that I already knew him and from high school. We dated back then. And we re-met again. And, you know, now our relationship is quite good, right? It's mutually respectful, loving, kind. We're kind to one another and supportive. Like, you know, I'll send a message, something like something positive, and I'll write yay, and he'll always text back yay. You know, it's like really, it's an upbeat, basically upbeat relationship.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, and it's not by no means perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect relationship, but the thing that's great about it is that it's completely negotiable. Everything is negotiable, which is something that I didn't experience before.
Yeah, it's interesting when people say, oh, it's not a perfect relationship. It's like, well, what is the definition of perfect? But, you know, having a healthy relationship where it's mutual, where people are kind, where you respect, where you're figuring it out together, where you're not putting somebody down, doesn't mean that you're not human and you don't get upset ever or you're never sad. That's being human as opposed to not a perfect relationship.
Well, that's the thing that plagued us before. Right? Like we kept getting criticized to be perfect. And instead, we're just real.
Now we're just real. We get to be ourselves. For a while, I've been sharing with you and giving mini masterclasses on the 11 Freedom Fulfillment Pillars. Now you can get the guidebook to all 11 Freedom Fulfillment Pillars right now. Simply go to Vulnerable to Valuable and hit the subscribe button. These are the same pillars I followed to create my business, become an international award-winning entrepreneur, speaker, and author, find the love of my life, and use it to create a fulfilled life. They are the same that I use with my clients, and now they are yours free. Go to www.vulnerabletovaluable.com and subscribe. And we're back with Anastasia Choplis, physicist and healer. What are some of the healthy characteristics that you realize now that you have this nice, healthy relationship? You named a few, but maybe just speak on them a little bit more. Like, what do you find? Like, if somebody's looking for a healthy relationship, what should they be looking for?
Well, you know, when I mentioned before, it took me 20 years of back and forth, like, could this be a healthy relationship? You know, it's like always asking, you know, it's like my scientific mind always like diving into what does it feel like to be loved? What does a healthy relationship feel like? And I finally figured out it just feels like when you're laying in the sun and all that warmth is coming to you and there's like no, you know, it's just the right temperature outside. It's not too hot, not too cold. You know, it's kind of like the Goldilocks. Everything is just right. You know,
It just feels right, right?
It just feels right. It doesn't have any jagged edges. And the jagged edges, when they do show up, you know, they're easily smoothed over, right? And for me, it just felt like, you know, I remember when the same thing still happens when I walk in the room and my dad smiles at me. And he always calls me sweetheart, you know, hi, sweetheart, I love you kind of thing. Whenever I feel that, I go, oh, that's love.
Yeah.
And my husband does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he walks in, he smiles, he says, I'm home when he comes home from work. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm home. And I feel like, you know, he's happy to see me and there's warmth there.
Yeah.
And it's not like, it's not a contest, like, no, I'll do this, you do that. There's no tit for tat. Mm-mm. If there's something that needs doing, we do it. And it's not like, well, you didn't do this. If you want it done, you just do it. Like if there's a mess somewhere, you know, and he sees it, like I might have dropped something on the floor, he'll just bend down and pick it up. It's like there's no argument, no nothing. It's just like this teamwork, mutual, supportive. It's not like a contest or... You don't have to be always vigilant. Oh, what are they going to say now?
Yeah, I love how you said it. You know, it's just teamwork. That's the way I feel now in my relationship as well. And I remember when I was married to my ex-husband, he would always say, you're not a team player. You're not a team player. I mean, I would ask a question just, you know, like to get clarification about whatever, you know, sort of like your the ring of water on the counter there for you. That was like, he would ask him a question, and then he would just scream at me, well, you know, you're never a team player. It was basically just do what I tell you and don't ask questions. That's what it was. And now it's like, it's so easy.
Yeah. So if my now husband sees the ring of water on the countertop, he would just wipe it clean and not even mention it, right? It's like, why scream at me for something? It's just water. Just wipe it up and be done with it if you don't like it.
Yeah, such a nice relief, huh? It just feels easy. And I think...
Yeah, and my experience with somebody who accuses you of something, like my husband would say, my ex would tell me, you're just not trying. Mm-hmm. And my response was, what, not trying harder to take your abuse? Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and take it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And...
Yeah, and the people that I always notice that the people that claim they're being abused are usually the abusers.
Well, I don't know if that's always true, but for sure, the abuser will turn it on him and become the victim.
Yeah,
they're very good at twisting things. That they're
right. The victim is usually the victimizer.
They're very clever at just twisting words, twisting situations, twisting facts. And making them the...
Right. And we, you know, and those of us that have been in those situations, at least from my perspective, you know, the people that I've helped, because I've helped a lot of people in these situations, having experienced it for, you know, decades myself.
Yeah.
So, and really thought about it, you know, I started to kind of notice this pattern. There's like this pattern that kind of comes through where the person that is trying to appease the victimizer who claim they're the victim, the people that are trying to appease it, they just want peace. They just want to be loved. So, you know, and so you do everything you can and you jump through hoops and you bend over backwards and it's never enough.
Never enough. And which is very self-defeating because then that's when you think it's your fault and they make sure to let you know it's your fault as well. So you feel it and then they tell you.
Yeah, you're just not trying hard enough.
Right, getting back to that. So, you know, you've learned throughout this whole process to do some really good self-care. What are some of your strategies for taking care of yourself now?
Oh, now?
Yeah, now.
So aside from, I have a 5-minute energy routine that I do every morning. The thing that has been really a constant in my life is exercise. Mm-hmm. So I have been exercising a minimum of an hour a day since I was 14 and I have never stopped. So that's like 53 years.
That's impressive.
And I found that I wasn't myself without expending it because I tend to be kind of, I'm a hyperactive person that looks calm. But my insides are always going, my brain's always going like that. So when I go out and exercise, everything just settles down.
What time of the day do you exercise?
Mornings. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right after breakfast, I go, this morning I went out for a walk. I'm going to do some yoga and some weightlifting shortly. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go out for another walk in the evening. And then the other things that I do is I make sure that I drink my plenty of water, get plenty of sleep.
Yeah.
You know, that last night, I don't know, I must have needed it because I woke up at 8 this morning. Thank goodness I didn't normally have a class that I teach at 7:30 on Wednesdays. So I'm going, thank goodness I didn't have a class. I wouldn't have made it. And make sure that I eat healthy, clean food every day.
Yeah.
That I nourish myself properly. And that goes a long way.
Yeah.
You know, most people, when they look at me and they go, oh, you have good genes. I go, no, I earned this.
Yeah.
I'm 67 going on 68. Hard to believe, right?
Well, I'm just a year behind you, girl.
So you're Italian, right?
I'm Italian. Yes. So, we may have some good genes, but I mean, I do the same things as you. I nourish myself and I use the same word. I don't say eat. It's really about nourishing. This is one of the main things I teach, you know, in the program with the women. It's like that's self-care is, you know, at the top of the list. You know, eating well, sleeping well, exercising, all of these things that you mentioned are just so important. Your meditation progress or process or your energy thing in the morning, yeah. whatever it is. These things are so important. And again, women have been used to be putting themselves on at the bottom or not even on the list. I don't even think they were on the list.
No, I wasn't on the list.
Right?
I didn't buy myself clothes for 2 years because I didn't have enough money. And my kids were growing, right? Because, you know, the child support.
Right. Right. That never appeared. Yes. But even in the relationship, you know, there was no time for you. I would have a guilt trip. He would make a guilt trip. Oh, you're leaving the house. He bought, memberships to a club, which was like 5 minutes from the house. But every time I wanted to go, why are you abandoning me? And then why are you not using the membership?
Yeah. No matter what you do, it's wrong.
So I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I guess I'm staying home because you're going to scream at me if I leave.
Yeah. I had a friend that lived a couple blocks away and, you know, her husband and my husband were good friends. And then she and I were good friends and they lived like around the corner. So she'd call me up. She says, "Hey, you want to come over for a cup of tea?" So I'd go over there. And an hour later he'd call, "When are you coming home?"
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, "Where do you think I am? I'm up the street. You want to come over? Come over."
They're mold. They just come out of the same mold, right? They're all the same thing.
I know. And then you think that all men are the same, but they're not.
They're not.
Because what we do is we put out this beacon. We have this kind of like beacon victim right here. We like to be victims because we've been a victim for so long. We forgot that we don't have to be. And so then the person that is the victimizer comes and they have, you know, our two antennas see each other and we go, ah, and we attract somehow. So that's why I didn't trust myself for such a long time, because I kept thinking I have my victim radiating out and everybody wants it. You know, the people that are willing to be abusers. And I didn't want it. It doesn't matter whether you want it or not, but if you don't release that old relationship energy, all that old relationship energy out of the body, the old feelings, like, you know, every time you think of the person in your past, do you have a bad feeling about them? As soon as you have a bad feeling about them, you're sending out a signal to somebody that you could have more bad feelings about that'll show up. That's the energy piece of it. That's the piece of that in my programs, I help people release. So we know from studies that our heart radiates out 20 feet. You can measure the emotions. And so if you have that pain sitting in there, there are some people that are attracted to that pain. And that's who they, you know, they know that you are an easy prey for them. And so when you stop being, you know, when you start being in your joy and when you start being confident, when you start being happy, as soon as you start being that, you radiate out this strength and they don't want that.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's the pain that we're in. As soon as the best thing to do is to release all the pain, and it's easier said than done. And it's actually easier done than people think. It's not years of talk therapy, but it's, there are like little energy rituals that anyone can do to release it. Like every time you think of someone, here's something that I tell people all the time. Every time you think of someone or you have a what I call a poopy thought, a thought that's not in your best interest, you know, the AA people call it stinking thinking, right? So you just imagine that the thought is sitting out here and you just cut it like with a sword. And then you just imagine it dropping into the earth away from you. And that symbolism is so strong because our subconscious operates with symbols, right? Mm-hmm. So it's also all scientific. You just cut it and let it drop away. Mm-hmm. And the more you do that, like every time you think, "Oh, it's so bad that I had that horrible relationship. I'm so depressed. I'll never have a great relationship." Poopy thought, cut it away, let it drop. Mm-hmm. Right? Because everything is possible. The future, mm-hmm. a bright future is possible.
It is possible. And we're living proof of it.
That's right. And, you know, and I went through a time where it was financially very challenging. You know, I'm out of that financial challenge. It's over.
Yeah, that's
had
beautiful.
Some very successful years with, you know, my husband working, I'm working, and, you know, bringing in and supporting a home and business and retirement and the whole thing. It's all there. And it's easy. It's not hard. It's just that during that time, it was really tough. And, you know, all of that is in the past. So anything that you want to leave in the past, you can leave in the past.
That's so wonderful to share those stories. I think just we'll probably be wrapping up pretty soon, but I want to ask you too about a little bit about your path to maybe self-forgiveness. This has been, I think, a challenge for, I think, a lot of women. And I just wanted to hear a little bit of your journey.
How I forgave myself when I realized, how did I forgive myself? I realized that I wasn't the only smart person, capable person that got into trouble, right? As soon as I realized that this is pandemic, it's especially pandemic, you know, among capable, intelligent, accomplished women, that I started to see, well, that's a piece of life that I didn't know how to deal with. They don't have schools for
right
growing up.
How to deal with the narcissist in a relationship. They do not.
Right. They do not. There's no such school. And the only way we learn it is, you know, it's like sewing the parachute on the way down.
Interesting metaphor.
Either going to do splat or you're going to make it in time, right?
That I think that's helpful because, you know, women are, again, they're self-blame, putting themselves down, all of these things like, well, how can I just forgive my, I should have known this, all that. And just to know that you're not alone, there's nothing wrong with you.
And the second thing is that I learned to reach out. So my first step was going to Al-Anon meetings. So find a meeting with people that have similar situations. And you don't want to commiserate. What you want to do is just reach out and hug somebody, basically, just to feel like you're lovable. Because I didn't feel lovable, right? I thought, who would want to be with me? And, you know, it's like nothing could be further from the truth. And the other thing is I felt incompetent and, you know, unable to handle my own life. And it turns out that not only was I capable, I basically excelled at it.
Yes, yes.
And so the thing that you're thinking in your mind is not truth.
That's right.
And it's really hard. It's really hard for us to see our own label because we're in the bottle and the label's out here. So somebody else, you know, needs to reflect it back to us.
That's beautiful. So how can our listener find out more about you?
My website, scientifichealer.com.
Perfect.
Right. And at the right, at the very top of the page, there's a masterclass link where you can go in and listen to, it's a free class, gives you tips on how to deal with difficult people. There are some stories of people just like them. One story was a woman named Susan who had a very difficult father and was angry at him for 40 years and how it affected her life. Mm-hmm. And how she dramatically changed after doing a quick relationship clearing release, you know, releasing all the energy bonds between her and her dad. Because when you think bad thoughts, like, I'm so angry at him, I'm really angry at what he did to me, that he did all that awful stuff, you know, you create a link to them mm-hmm. and you're losing your energy to them.
Right. They were vampires in our life and now they're vampires even afterwards if we
right. And so the important thing is not just forgiveness, but gratitude. Mm-hmm. Right. Being grateful they played that role in your life so you could learn the lesson to let it go and move forward. Because now you're so enriched, you'll never be a victim ever again.
So true. What does love is kind mean to you?
Well, if I think about it, what does it mean to me? It, like when I hear the phrase, I think to myself, yeah, it's what it feels like. Right. It's what it feels like. Love, like people say, well, I love you, but then they're yelling at you and right. criticizing you and mm-hmm. saying all, but for me, it's that's what it feels like to me.
Real love is kind. Mm-hmm.
'Cause we experienced other things that they say love and it's not.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, for your ideas. I'm sure our listener will, even if they just pick up one, this is my hope, is that they pick up one. And it helps some feel a little bit better. They can shift and move forward in their life. So thank you so much for your time.
You're most welcome, Rosie. It was a total delight sharing this. And I do hope that people will find their kind love in their life, just like you and I have.
Real love is kind. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
That's it for today's episode. Head on over to vulnerabletovaluable.com and subscribe to the show. When you subscribe, you'll instantly get a special ebook, Ask Confidently for What You Want. And when you subscribe to the show and post a review to iTunes, you'll be entered into a drawing to win a free consult with me. Plus, your subscribing will help our mission to inspire 100 million women worldwide to heal and move forward from their abusive relationships. That's vulnerabletovaluable.com, the podcast that guides you to reclaim your voice, value, confidence, and courage.